All right, good morning and welcome to the Second Court of Appeals. We only have one case on our morning docket. It's Cook versus State of Texas, cause number 2-15-319-CR. I'm Judge Livingston. Justice Dofano is to my right, and Justice Gardner is to my left. Apparently, Ms. Simmons is the only one here today to argue. We have tried to reach, and we have reached Ms. Alexander's office, but they fear she may still be in court. We appreciate your patience in waiting and giving her a few more minutes, but still no word. Some of the justices have some questions for you, so if you would first like to make a statement, then we'll proceed.
May it please the court, Andrea Simmons on behalf of the state. I would like to first note that in my brief, I only had one response, and what I did was forget to drop a footnote stating for purposes of brevity, I was responding to her 2 points of error and my 1 point of error. And so I would like to apologize for having left that out. But I do believe that my first point of error responds to all of her issues raised. I think at this time, I really is kind of a very fact-specific case. And since I'm in response to the appellant's brief, I would just like to open it up for questions from the panel, if anyone has any.
I guess I would like to ask, because this is an unusual set of facts, what does the state believe the evidence is that supports some kind of link between this appellant and the actual apartment that's numbered 87?
The evidence that is contained in the record that allows there to be an inference linking the appellant to the vehicle at issue was that we had two different vehicles by citizens who called into 911 and reported the careless driving and described the vehicle as a silver Hyundai Elantra. They followed that vehicle to the apartment complex at Rockbrook and observed the vehicle park inside an enclosed garage numbered 87. When officers arrived, they spoke to the witnesses who had no description of the person driving the vehicle, nor had they seen that person exit the garage. Officers then at that point went to the front of the building and observed apartments which were numbered and lined up with the garages. And so the apartment lined up to garage number 87 was apartment number 87. When officers then approached the door and knocked and were able to speak with the appellant, during their conversation with her, she stated that she was in fact the registered owner of a silver Hyundai Elantra and that she had just arrived home from a party in Mansfield. And so that information, as far as the relation of the car and the apartment, really those would be the facts that we are relying on for that inference.
And one of the witnesses gave the officers or the dispatcher the actual license plate number of the car.
The officers were in possession of a license plate number given by the citizens who followed the suspect vehicle. However, when officers asked the appellant what the license plate number for her vehicle was, she could not recall it, and the officers did not thereafter confirm whether or not the plate given to 911 matched the plate of appellant's car.
There was never any warrant for her arrest, is that correct?
There was no warrant. This was all just a warrantless arrest.
And in order to arrest a person without a warrant, you have to have probable cause and exigent circumstances. Isn't that correct?
Well, under 14.03 of the Texas Code of Criminal Procedure, you can arrest with a person found in a suspicious place under circumstances showing that they're guilty of some felony, including Chapter 49.
Her home was a suspicious place?
her, the apartment was a suspicious place. It is not inherently a suspicious place, but based upon the facts available to an officer and the reasonable inferences that can arouse justifiable suspicion, any place can become a suspicious place. Hospitals have previously been deemed suspicious places, as well as backyards and other people's homes and apartments.
So why do we have warrants? If any place in the world is a suspicious place, and so you don't have to have, are you saying you don't, all you need is reasonable suspicion, no probable cause, no exigent circumstance, why don't we just go pick up everybody we want, we think qualifies for a Terry stop? Why don't we just put them all in the cage and take them on downtown?
Well, the warrants do serve for situations where officers have time to obtain a warrant rather than do a warrantless search.
So the warrants are for the benefit of the officer?
No, the case law requires that you have a warrant unless you can meet certain exceptions to the warrant requirement.
Exigent circumstances.
Exigent circumstances.
What was the exigent circumstance with a woman in her home?
Well, under 1403, it doesn't require exigent circumstances. It requires the suspicious place plus the ability to show that they're guilty of the felony. Although one of the cases that I did cite to you in my brief, I would have to look and see what case it was, did note that although it was a suspicious place, they also found that the timing required the necessity to obtain the alcohol test to determine the intoxication level. And when you're doing the analysis on the suspicious place, determining whether or not a place is in fact suspicious, the timing from the cause of the, the event that's relating to the apprehension and the crime, those have to be short in time. And so that is that's the big step that may not be present in the warrant requirement. And it is different somewhat from the exigent circumstances, is that there's a certain amount of time that is short in nature, and that's a fact-specific analysis on whether or not that time can make that place a suspicious place. In the facts of this case, Ms. Alexander's brief states that at the minimum, the officer had arrived at the apartment at a minimum of 13 minutes after the 911 calls, and at a maximum 23 minutes after the 911
calls. So the natural dissipation of the alcohol is your exigent circumstance?
Well, the state isn't relying on the exigent circumstance. I was indicating that another case, in determining whether or not the facts of that case resulted in a suspicious place, noted that concluding appellant's backyard to be a suspicious place and recognizing warrantless arrest necessary because testing for alcohol is a time-sensitive matter. And that was out of Sandoval, which is out of El Paso in 2000.
What about the U.S. Supreme Court case that said smelling marijuana outside a home does not give you justification to enter the home to search or arrest or do anything?
And I would agree to that. And that's actually a good point, because in this case, the officers did not go into her home. This was a consensual encounter in an investigative matter when they approached her apartment. They knocked on the door. There was no forced entry into the home. She was not threatened. If she didn't open the door, they would knock it down.
Took her downtown and put her in jail.
After she had consensually opened up her door and engaged in a conversation with officers, which then allowed them to confirm some of the facts and the reliable information they had from the concerned citizens.
So, in other words, to get probable cause to get a warrant?
Probable cause would not have, in this case, resulted until after they first had the investigative detention, which resulted in them speaking to her. After speaking to her and observing her, they were then able to rise to the level of reasonable suspicion that she had, in fact, been driving while intoxicated. Then once they took her to the parking lot and observed her more, in addition to the field sobriety test, that, taken together with all of the other circumstances, allow the officers to then come to probable cause.
Well, then why do we even have warrants anymore?
The warrants, why do we have warrants? We have warrants so that officers are making sure that they're going before a judge or a magistrate and giving them the correct information which allows them to enter a person's home or arrest that person based on facts that would result in a lawful arrest. But what I'm saying is that in this case, nobody entered the appellant's
home. So you only need a warrant if you're going to enter a home?
I'm sorry?
You only need a warrant if you're going to enter a home?
You need a warrant if you're going to enter a home, seize property, seize a person. At the point that they were going to appellant's house, apartment, in this case, there was no probable cause to arrest her, which is why they merely were conducting an investigation at the time when they knocked on her door. In fact, had she not opened the door and engaged in a conversation, I don't know what else officers could have done at that point if there would have been enough information for them to get a warrant.
No.
But she did open the door and then engage in a conversation with officers. And based upon the her answers to their questions, as well as the officers' observations of her red and watery eyes, slurred speech, and balance.
You're not claiming she went with them voluntarily. It was definitely an arrest at her house without a warrant. That's your position.
No, Your Honor, I believe that's your position. My position.
Sorry?
I thought that was your position, not my position. I'm not arguing that she was arrested at her house.
Oh, okay.
At
she
her apartment.
Went with them voluntarily?
She came to the door voluntarily.
When she got in your car to go downtown.
She was under arrest.
She was under arrest. She didn't go voluntarily.
No. That was in the down at the parking lot. They did not arrest her at her front door. At that point, they only had reasonable suspicion to continue an investigation. And so she was actually later arrested after she failed the field sobriety tests, in addition to the officer's observations and her answers to their questions, which corroborated the information given to officers by the concerned citizens who dialed 911.
And she, in her conversation with them initially, she confirmed that, is that this not correct, that she had just gotten home. She had been to a birthday party. She had consumed several drinks of alcohol, and she drove a car that matched the description of the car the witnesses had seen all over, as they described it, all over the road and hitting a concrete embankment and so forth. Is that right?
True. Those are correct, in addition to her statement that she had not consumed any alcohol at her apartment after she arrived home from the party in Mansfield.
Okay.
And those are some of the statements that the state is relying on during that consensual investigative conversation that officers were having with appellant when she voluntarily opened the door. And so those statements made by her, which are incriminating, taken into consideration or in with the other evidence that was given by the witnesses of the car, in addition to their personal observations of the odor of alcohol, red watery eyes, and the bad balance, all taken together then rose to the level of reasonable suspicion for them to then ask her to continue down to the parking lot with them for further investigation.
At some point, she had a blood test because we have the alcohol, percentage of alcohol in her blood, but that's not an issue in this case.
That was not raised by the appellant. The only thing they're raising was the motion to suppress. They actually entered a pled nolo contendere to the case on just the possibility of raising an appeal was preserved, and this is the only issue they raised was the motion to suppress her activities prior to her arrest.
And what was the main basis of the motion to suppress? Was it narrow, or do you remember?
I do not remember.
Let's see.
Off the time, I apologize for that.
Well, we've got it in the record, and I believe we've also requested the video. Is the vehicle actually seen on the video at any point?
It is not.
Okay.
The video basically consists of the first portion is an audio portion only from their body mics from when they approached the apartment, and then their conversation with her, and then taking her down to the parking lot, and then they position her in front of one of the patrol vehicles so that the camera can then capture the rest of it. But their conversation with her is audio recorded at her apartment door. Well, the state believes that in this case, that based on the specific facts of this case, that the officers did have enough information to approach the apartment and engage in a consensual or investigative conversation with the appellant, who consensually engaged in that conversation with them upon their facts already known to them, in addition to the information gathered from appellant and the officer's observation, they were able to rise to the level of reasonable suspicion for driving while intoxicated. After having conducted the field sobriety test under the totality of the circumstances, the state does believe there was enough facts to rise to probable cause. And we would also argue that her apartment was in fact a suspicious place based on the small amount of time frame and the facts that led the officers to her apartment in this case. And we would ask that this court please affirm the judgment of the trial court regarding the motion to suppress, actually. And thank you for having me, and I hope that you enjoy the rest of your afternoon.
Well, thank you, Ms. Simmons. We appreciate your patience in waiting this morning, and we appreciate your arguments in discussing the case with us. Your case is now submitted, and we are adjourned for the morning.
All right. The Honorable Court of Appeals, by the Supreme Court of Texas, now stands adjourned. Please be seated.